Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, good morning, everybody. 4 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name is Mark Salem, and for the next 2 hours, you're kind of stuck with me. So if you'd like to call us and you have a car question, easy, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. And you're welcome to call us. Tell us the year, make, and model of your car, and let us have the opportunity to ask you some questions. So you give us symptoms, and we ask you questions, stuff like that. Makes it a little easier. And what's kind of important is the give and take. The give and take is we ask questions, and you answer questions, and there's three answers. It's yes, no, or I don't know. That's normal in our business. So we're willing to help you. Just give us a call. We can usually handle about 10, 12 calls an hour. We'll be here for 2 hours. But if it's like every other time, everybody waits till the last half an hour and does their thing. So my name is Mark Salem, and I've been an ASE Master Technician for 35 years. Sitting next to me is my daughter, Andy, who's still wiping the sleep out of her eyes.
Yeah, right. Haven't had enough coffee yet this morning.
I understand. Andy's actually the one that runs our operation now that Renee and I spend a little bit of time up north. And so what's it like when you're flying the airplane, Mrs.?
Oh.
Here's a hard question. The best and the worst. I know that, but the best and the worst.
What do you mean?
What's the best part of your job and the worst part of your job?
Oh, I think the customers are probably, for the most part, we have some really good customers, so I enjoy talking to them and seeing them and that kind of a thing, and helping people, of course, but there's a lot of downsides, but, you know, let's not start the show in a negative tone.
Okay, so, but the downside is sometimes employees, sometimes customers come, some kind vendors, sometimes when the power goes out in the building.
Yeah.
And all that kind of stuff, that's kind of all within your range.
Yeah.
So, and I was in here the other day, and there's a lady in there with an 1,100 customer number.
Mm-hmm.
And we're at 36,000, 38,000.
Yeah.
So that's kind of cool to me. Now, when you rewrote the software, I know you did a lot of work, but the thing I like the most is you put the customer number on the ticket.
Yeah.
And so the technician knows that anybody that's, I mean, we don't have many three digits. Our family's three digits, but.
No, we still have some threes.
Is that right?
And twos.
Yeah, and twos.
Okay.
Yeah.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, and twos.
Okay. All right. But we have, I mean, when they're twos and threes and fours.
Yeah, those people are few and far between, but there's still those ones out there.
That have been in the last couple of years.
Yeah,
okay.
Absolutely.
But anyway, the lady from 1100, it was 1108 or something like that. It was fun to just talk to her.
Mm-hmm.
And many of them have been with us. Now, our software went into operation in 1990, 91.
Mm-hmm.
So those that have those really low numbers have been around for a very
yeah.
long time.
And it's fun to see customers, there's kind of a wave sometimes. We'll service a lot of their vehicles, and they will be older vehicles, and then we won't see them for 2 to 3 years because they get something new, and then we get to see them again, and that's kind of fun too, and we can see that within our software.
Okay. And sitting next to me is my son, Alan. He runs the performance side of our business. He does diesel trucks. He does lighting. He lifts and lowers tires and wheels. And I think one of the questions I get a lot is speedometers and calibrating and fixing those kinds of things.
Yeah.
So what do you do to correct those kinds of things?
It depends. I mean, it's truck specific, year specific. What are you doing?
No. Well, it just cut out.
It cut out?
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
Sorry.
You didn't see his pulse flinch.
Yeah, I did, but I didn't know if I was falling out of the chair or something. What was going on? If there was someone standing behind me. It's year specific, make specific, engine specific. It's just all different. Sometimes tuning, you can do it. Sometimes you got to go in and do it manually. It's just.
Okay, tuning means we're going to add a box to the car, and we're going to give it different programming, and sometimes we can change the diameter or the circumference of the tires.
Yeah, you don't add a box. You go in there and you rewrite the factory software, but yes.
Okay, and that's going in through the ABS module typically to change the tires?
Yeah.
Okay,
usually.
Okay, but the least is our industry can provide them a sheet by you downloading the original tires plus the tires you put on that gives them an idea of how many miles an hour they're off, 10 through 70.
Right.
Okay.
Right.
So does anybody pay attention to that, or they just fold it up and put it in their pockets?
I've never had any questions on it.
Okay. All right.
So
and what's the most you've seen off? Have you seen 10 miles an hour?
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, that's easy. I would say probably 20%.
Okay.
So.
70 miles an hour is 14.
Yeah.
Off 14.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. I know you, on my truck, we adjusted the ABS module, and then we also adjusted the tire diameter in my Edge.
Yep.
And I know that when I go through those radar traps, I'm right on the money.
Right.
I'm right on the money. So anyway, we got a caller. Who might that be, Gil?
Actually, we had the caller, but it dropped. So I'm sorry.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. If you have a question about a car problem, and we can handle diesel questions about performance, about oil leaks. We can talk about the longevity of them. We can do that kind of stuff. Either one of Andy or Alan has been around. How long have you been in the family business?
Way too long. Just kidding.
How many years?
Probably about 20.
Okay, and you're probably somewhere around there.
Yeah, I think on paper I'm like 23, I think. Yeah. Andy can answer okay. that better, but yeah.
So 23 is like when you were 10 and you picked up trash. Well, do you remember, what was your first job?
What are you talking about? That would make me 33.
Oh, okay, okay.
I thought you're like a math wizard.
I am, but I don't really care about your answers, and I don't really care about the rest of that stuff.
So you just ask and then don't listen to the answers?
No, I don't, because yeah. I got too much.
I know the feeling. I do that at home.
Yeah. Yeah. I'm sitting here, and I'm flying the plane, and you two guys are just sitting there with your feet up on the desk. So the answer is, how long?
I think 23 years is what
okay.
it's been. Okay. Which put me at 17.
That, yeah, but 18. That doesn't count all the years that we spent,
yeah.
you know,
that's
picking
just time
up
when
trash
I was legal.
And, yeah. Not legal the child work. Labor laws. Right. We won't get into that early right. years.
But you tell people that you started by sweeping cigarette butts off the parking lot.
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
That's what we did.
That little red broom.
Yeah.
Remember that thing?
Yeah.
If we ever came across that thing, I would smash it over my knee. Go bam!
Oh, my.
So that and when you first started here, what did you want to do, Alan? Did you want to be a tech? Did you, what, did you have a, did you have an idea that
I wanted
we would
to go
grow?
Back home and watch cartoons. I wanted to do. Oh, you mean when I grow up?
Oh,
you haven't grown up yet.
No, I haven't. You're right. I aftermarket. I mean, that was always my. That's what I like to do the best. Okay. Was aftermarket performance stuff like that.
Okay, aftermarket means taking a factory stock car. A stock car is one that comes out of the factory, and it is what it is. And what are some of the things you do to those pickup trucks and cars?
Lift wheels, tires, suspension. You know, steps, lights. I mean, all kinds of different stuff.
Okay.
Audio, video, whatever.
All right. The electric steps, is there a age range for those, or is it pretty much wide open? Because I envision that the older people like this electric steps. When you open up the door, the steps comes out.
You mean on which ones I install them on?
Yeah.
Well, they're very expensive, so it's typically, you know, older. You know,
okay.
I would say you don't get many 18, 19-year-old kids spending $2,000 on power steps. So, yeah, I would say it's, you know, 30s okay. and up, 35 okay. and up, something like that.
All right. Now, don't they have lights underneath them where you can?
They do now, yeah.
Okay. And so what kind of lights have people ask for?
They come with lights. There's a little LED light.
White.
Yeah.
Okay.
Alan has the fancy ones.
Oh,
yeah,
what
I
have
mean,
you got?
We can just cut them off and I can put whatever. I mean, if you absolutely have to have something green or pink or, you know, whatever, then I can make them whatever color we want. But they just come with little white lights. So it'll eliminate the step.
What's your truck got?
It's just got red ones. It's a safety thing.
It's a safety thing?
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so you can find them?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, in the middle of the night?
That's right.
I think one of our flag trucks has red, white, and blue, doesn't it?
Yeah, it has red and blue.
Yeah, mm-hmm. That's kind of cool. All right, we got a caller. Who might that be?
Okay, that would be Fred.
Fred, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning, Mark. I really enjoy your show.
Thank you.
I've got a 1970 Dodge Challenger RT. It's a 440, 375 horsepower, and it's hard starting and rough running. And it's got a Holley Demon carburetor on an Edelbrock manifold. And I was wondering, you know, should we go to fuel injection on the thing or replace the carburetor, or what do you think?
Well, I think we should just find the reason why it's doing what it's doing.
Okay.
Because what happens if this is a broken valve spring, and you do a bunch of work, and then you have the same problem because you're not going to be able to overcome something like that. Let me ask you a question. What is it doing that you don't like it to do? Is it idling rough? Is it missing? Is the acceleration poor? Is it pinging? What's the situation?
It idles rough, real rough, and okay. it's hard to start. You know, you got to start it three or four times.
Okay.
And to keep it running, and then you know, once you get going, it smooths out and runs all right.
Okay. After it warms up, does it idle good?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Okay. It's still got that lope in it, you know.
Okay.
That burp, 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 burp.
Okay. So it's kind of a rolling idle. Does it have a rolling idle all the time, or are there times it's nice and smooth and the time it rolls?
No, it's rolling all the time.
Okay, so it's probably got a camshaft in it? A special camshaft or something bigger?
Well, I just got the car, so okay. I don't know.
All right.
Yeah.
And is it an automatic or a standard?
It automatic.
Okay. And you got a Holley on it, right?
A Holley Demon carburetor.
Yeah. There isn't a carburetor I hate more than that one. I mean, it's just, we can work on that for the rest of our lives, and we're really good at that. I'll give you an example. There's a metering plate, and I think on your Demon there's two. The metering plate. It's between the bowl and the body of the carburetor. That warps. Buying one is as much as a new carburetor. What the new procedure is now is you put it in a press, and you crack it like a chiropractor. So you literally straighten it out. Well, here's the deal. We either straighten them out or we break them. But either way, the worst case scenario is you buy another metering block. There's just lots of other carburetors out there. The CFM would be something that would be written on the side of the carburetor, or at least give us a number that we can look up the CFM. But I think wherever you go, I think what you should do is just say to them, I've got a rolling idle. I want you to deal with that. And I want you to check the tailpipe, what's coming out of the tailpipe. Because if we got a bunch of raw gasoline coming out of the tailpipe and we got black spark plugs, that's easy. Let's trim the gas up front. Let's get the spark plugs tan. Then you can't believe how often we have a timing issue that we can adjust, either too high or too low. But we can also bring that timing to the edge of a razor blade. So when it's fully warmed up on really hard acceleration, you're going to race the VW bug next to you. Then we're going to make it rattle just a tad and maybe not back off one, so we could just do that. So the answer is I think wherever you take it, I think what you should have them do is just give you an analysis of where you're at right now. That's kind of where I and then what's the first step? It's not like a paintbrush where you're going to do a broad. Let's just do the first step. You said it hard, card stolt. Cold, then good. Bring it to us. Let it sit over. Bring the shop. Let them sit it overnight and let them check the choke. So let me remind you to start it in the morning. One pump closes the choke flap. That's before you crank it. Then you might go two or three. You take your foot off the throttle. You hit the. You should start, stumble, and then idle up. That's proper. So people don't set the choke. So the flap's wide open, but you have to push your pedal to the floor and let go, and then the flap shuts. Now we got choke. And it's also got high idle. So then you start it up, and you go, pop, 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 pop. And then the first thing everybody does is kick the choke off by throttling it up. Well, you went to all that trouble to set the choke, and now all of a sudden you just kicked it off. So on the older model cars, they're kind of temperamental about that. What part of town do you live in?
Santan Valley.
Oh, wait. Well, yeah. I don't have anybody out there. I wish I could tell you that. I've got north, south, east, and west, but from the center of Phoenix. We're at Warner and I-10. If you'd like to bring it there, you plan on leaving it. And, I'm quite sure we have two or three guys that are gray haired and we've worked on your car before.
Oh, okay.
So.
I'm sorry, but I have one other problem. The, windshield wipers. They don't park. When you shut them off, they'll shut off wherever you stop them.
Usually that's something to do with the motor. When you take power from it or when you drop the ground on it, they should park. Now, sometimes that's an adjustment we can fix. But I can tell you that the motor on that is nowhere near the money on the motor of my Dodge pickup. I mean, it's newer. You know what I mean? It's just newer. So getting the things to park, there's a couple of tests you run first, and then you'll know what the heck it is. That's on a 1 to 10 scale, that's a 3. So that's no big deal. And getting it to run good is a 6 or a 7. So you got to know what you're doing. That kind of stuff. Okie doke.
Okay, thanks a lot, right. Mark.
You betcha. 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open. Andy, Alan, and Mark Salem at your service. Welcome back, everybody. 21 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. My name's Mark Salem. Sitting here next to me is my daughter Andy and my son Alan. And the both of them have been in the business for more than 20 years. So together, you're getting lots of experience here, probably 70, 80 years worth of experience, all wrapped up into one. Let me tell you about Blackwell Automotive. He's up at 40th and Greenway. Tom is a crazy guy. Tom really is good at what he does. What he can do that I can't do is he can fabricate things. He can take your car and take out the automatic and put a four-speed in it. We just don't shine well on that. He has the ability to build stuff, but he also has the ability to diagnose it. Not too long ago, a lady had bought an air conditioning unit for her old pickup truck. That's on a 1 to 10 scale. That's a difficulty of 12. So she took it to a friend, and he had it for a long time, but he just gave up. So I said, well, I think Blackwell will take it. I called him, and he said, this lady was tickle pink. 2 days, the truck is bad. Plus, he put power brakes on it that she didn't have before. So she's really happy. So if you have that, but he also does oil changes and tire rotations and all that other jazz. So Blackwell, 40th Street in Greenway, he's a good guy. Let's go to the phones. Luke, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, Mark, good morning. Nice to talk to you. Hey, I've got an old truck that I bought. Well, old to me. It's a 96 Dodge Ram half-ton two-wheel drive V8. Bought it from an old guy, and I bought it because it was like a time capsule. An old man, in the 3 years previous to me purchasing it from him, had put less than 1,500 miles on the truck.
Okay.
So,
okay.
But I just I've been driving it for maybe, 4 or 5 months. And just recently noticed one day that I started to get this, I don't know what the technical term would be, but failing idle, basically, at neutral, at a stoplight, the RPMs are diving from, 11, 1200 idle down to zero, and they bounce back and forth. It wasn't dying, and then one day I was parked at Home Depot on a very slight incline, and it did actually die. Now, I also noticed that recently is I noticed that it went away when I filled the tank back up with fuel to full.
Okay. All right, well, I got a couple of comments. First of all, the 1100 RPM idle, there's three sections of a carburetor. You have idle, you got mid, and you got wide open throttle. At 1100, you're completely out of the idle circuit. Completely.
Okay, so I guess 1100 wouldn't be correct. Right now I'm actually in it right now. And
no, it's not
idling.
It's not correct.
It's idling just below 1,000 RPM.
Okay. Well, it's just that's not right. So you said it was an automatic or standard?
Automatic.
So probably 650, 700 in drive. So this isn't a tough thing. What I hear you say is the idle is not stable. The question is does that mean hot and cold, or is that variable, or is it only hot or is it only cold? But it's probably going to be just an adjustment of the carburetor. That's more than likely what it's going to be. Let's get it into the idle circuit so we have a steady flow of fuel. We've got some adjustments on the idle circuit. And then make sure that we've got normal carburetor and then we have wide open throttle carburetor. So that's really not that difficult. Andy, what would be the front counter estimate of the phone call on that?
I would probably say maybe 79 to 139 for diagnosis on it.
And most of the time, 50% of the time, that takes care of the repair. Because once you diagnose it, I got to do this, or I got an EGR sticking open or something like that. So sometimes the diagnosis is the same as the repair. By the time you get there, you turn it. It's not really that easy. I'm making it sound different. But you turn a screw and you reroute some spark plug. But as far as you said, sometimes it does this. We're not going to chase that. We're going to fix the idle problem first. Then we're going to give it back to you and say, okay, now let us know. And you're going to say, no, I still have this problem. Or you're going to say, no, you got it.
Do you think the tank of gas or being full or low makes a difference?
You know, that's a great question. I'll tell you what I was thinking about that. If he stuffs the tank, we're going to draw raw fuel forward. Okay, through the evaporative system. Mm-hmm. It's going to make it run rich. He's going to have black smoke and he's going to smell it. He didn't say anything about that at all. As far as it filling up, the tank picks up off the bottom of the tank. So it, even if you fill the tank, it doesn't make any difference. The only time is if he stuffs the tank and then we run, instead of sucking the vapor off the fuel tank forward, we suck liquid gas.
And by stuffing it, you mean once it stops, you keep pressing the gas.
Click, 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 click. And you go until you pull the trigger and it kicks back and you've already put another dollar into it. Yeah, that's bad for any car.
The other thing too is, I mean, maybe the gas gauge is off. Maybe it's reading a quarter and it's actually at, you know, less than an eighth.
Yeah.
And, you know, not to mention you're sucking, when you get to the bottom, there's lots of debris and crap that, you know, that stays at the bottom too. So could be something with that. Could be just a lack of fuel when you get to the bottom of that, if it's moving around and the draw straw's not grabbing it all the time or it's,
How many miles have you put on it? I know you said you've been driving it 4 to 5 months, but how many miles has it been?
Oh, I've probably put 12,000, Yeah, 1,400 miles.
Okay. So at least a couple tanks.
What's weird to me, though, is that all the rest of the time, again, right now I'm sitting in it, all the rest of the time it idles dead nuts perfect.
But at 11 or 10 or 11?
No. It's idling right now. Now, again, there's only two posts. There's only two indicators between 0 and 1,000. So it's idling on the, if the first post is 0, second post is
500.
200. Okay, first post, well, again, there's 0, then there's a post, and then another post, and that's 1, right?
Okay. So all right, we got it.
On the third post just below 1, and it's perfect.
Okay.
So it idles like that all the time, and then I'm waiting to test it once I think it's going to come back once I get under a quarter of a tank.
Then if it does, I would just say at that point, take it to a shop when it's acting up. So, I mean, obviously you're not going to fill the tank and then take it to a shop. So if it does it and you notice that it's only, you know, when it's at the, you know, quarter or half mark, then take it in then so they can duplicate the issue.
And this is a 24-year-old truck. And it's got emissions and stuff on it that we don't even have anymore. But I think we don't chase the full thing. I think what we do is we just start at the basics. And I'm not trying to drive up your bill, neither is anybody else. But there's some basics we need to do. We need to check the tailpipe emissions. We need to set the idle. Because you said 11, and now you're saying 750. And so 750 is the appropriate number. But on a cold start, then it would really be the 11 or 1200 because the choke's going to stay open until it warms up and then it's going to shut off. I got to go, Luke, because I got an appointment to get here. I've got 20 seconds to finish this segment. Jim, if you stay right there, I'd be happy to help you out. Automatic Transmission Exchange is over on 40th Street in Washington. He's really a good guy. He's been around since 1968. So if you have a transmission issue, may I suggest Automatic Transmission Exchange at 40th Street in Washington. Phil's a good guy. You'll be happy. Well, thank you for sticking with us. It's 10:34. We have four lines open. We have one taken with Jim, and I'm going to get to him in less than 30 seconds. So if you'd like to join us, 602. I almost gave my cell phone, 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Your make and model of your car, how many miles it's got on it, and then let's talk about what it's doing. And Jim, good morning. Thank you for holding through the break. How can I help you?
Good morning, Mark. Thank you for taking the call. I have a neighbor around the corner, an old man, and he's got a 79 Camaro with about 85,000 miles on it. And he stops by about, this is his fun car, he stops by about twice a week and shoot the bull. And he was asking me about if I had any tips on what he should do with his car. He leaves for 4 months out of the year to go to Illinois. Why, I don't know. anybody would want to go there. He wanted to know if there were some tips, like what he should do before he leaves and then when he gets back.
It's easy.
Let you borrow it.
Yeah.
While he's gone.
Yeah. I'll help him keep it warmed up and driving it if you want.
I offered to buy it, and he said, he looked at me with that look like, you know, what, are you crazy?
And you know what I tell old guys when that happens? I say, give me your business card and give me a number on the back. And then somebody else comes up and they say, well, here's my number. And you go, all right, well, somebody's already beat you by $1,200. And so what you're doing is you're doing it in a nice way. You're saying, hey, it's open for bid. The answer to your question is he stores it with fresh oil. He stores it with the fuel tank full. He doesn't have to put any additive in the fuel pump or the fuel tank because 4 months is no big deal. And he disconnects the battery. Disconnect the battery, full of fuel, fresh oil, we're done. That's what he needs to do.
Okay. Fresh oil, fuel tank, fill, and what was the last one?
Disconnect the battery.
Okay.
And let me ask you a question about this Camaro. Does it have a wing on the back of the trunk of it?
No.
Okay. Does it have plastic or anything fancy in the front end?
No, I don't believe so.
All right.
It's pretty good shape, too. You know?
Does he garage it when he's gone?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, it's garage, and he, like I say, even when he's down here, he only takes it out maybe once or twice a week, if that.
And I would tell you that's a better question if I can answer that too. We don't want to take it out for 15 or 20 minutes. We want to go through a complete heat cycle. So we want to bring it up to operating temperature and then bring it back down. It's going to hurt the motor more for him going to the bar and then going from there to Safeway and then coming home, because that's not a complete heat cycle. So that motor's going to love us a lot more if he'll get on the freeway and, like I say, bring it up to operating temperature, and then if he wants to take it home, that's fine. But that's going to be a bigger thing than how he stores it. Okay?
Okay. And when he gets back, is there anything he should do?
No, he plugs in his battery or charges it, whatever he needs. The tank's full. He gets in and drives it.
Give it a good long drive.
Yeah. See, that's like a horse. If you pull him out of the barn once a month and you walk around the block, he's never going to really be anything other than a horse that walks around the block. But if you take the horse and once a week you kind of trot him around the ranch just a little bit, then he's going to get better and better and better. So it's kind of the same way. I don't want him to abuse the car. I just want him to use the car. Okay?
Right. Okay. Thank you.
Oh, you're more than welcome, Jim. 602-508-0960. And we got 2 minutes, he said. Didn't we say 2 minutes? Oh, gosh.
I didn't hear that.
I didn't hear it.
All right. See, I do. Anyway, Kurtz Automotive is at I-17 and
did
Bell
you say
Road.
Something, Gil?
The morning. Did he say 2 minutes?
Gil, did you say 2 minutes? Oh, okay. I didn't hear it.
Okay.
Right. Don't pretend like you got some supersonic hearing there. <right? laughs>
Listen, I heard him.
Okay. Evidently.
There's a little volume control down there.
Yeah, I know.
Okay. All right. Did you hear him, Andy?
Nope.
Okay. All right. Well.
Minute and a half. I heard that. Yeah.
Gil has been my engineer for I don't know how many years. Five, 10
Do you hear him when
years.
You're not on the radio? Just in your ear?
I hear him all the time.
Even when you're not on the radio?
No, I didn't get the question. I only hear him here. But him and I can telepathically talk to each other.
Oh, man.
You know, and I'll tell you what, I'll tell him, and that means something to him. So you just tap the mic.
And I do that too at work all the time.
Like,
There's times that stuff happens at work, and she won't even look at me because she knows I'm making a stupid face or something. I mean, she'll just...
You know, and this isn't television, so she's typing but looking the other way.
Oh, yeah, because
she doesn't
want to. I am not looking in that
office. Or we can have conversations that if people heard, they would have no idea what we're talking about, because we can be talking about answering a question, and then one of us is asking way left turn, asking.
It's been our family.
So, oh my gosh!
All right, just finish your thing up here.
All right, yeah. You know what? I run the show, so if I break at 41 or 42, he doesn't care. There's only two ones I got to hit: the 38 at the bottom and the 58-50. So I'm in control here, you guys. Kurtz Automotive is the I-17 in Bell. He's on the northeast corner. He's been around for a very long time, since 1987. Kurt's a master, and Jeff is a master, and those two guys can find the problem and fix your car. They do oil changes, and they do transmissions, and they do everything from the top to the bottom. I've known Kurt for a long time, and one of the times he did something for me that I was very, well, he made himself look great, and actually a little bit of me. A lady calls and says she's had three places that tell her she needs an engine. I say, just take it by Kurt's. She needed an oil pressure switch. The oil pressure was down to nothing, but the engine wasn't making any noise. So Kurt's put an oil pressure switch on it. The bill was less than $100, and she drove away. After a week, she calls me and she says, I wouldn't believe it if had I not experienced it, but the truck is fine and the oil pressure is normal. So do we do a $4,000 engine or do we get a second opinion? But honesty has everything to do with it. So if you're up there near I-17 in Bell, Kurtz Automotive is my place you should go. Well, welcome back, everybody. We got to push a bunch of buttons here. 44 minutes after the hour of 10 o'clock. Andy Salem is sitting here next to me. Alan Salem is sitting here next to me. And all three of us have lots of years working on cars. And the Alan handles the performance side, the big truck side, the lift and lower, and all the fancy stuff and custom stuff. Are you shaking your head yes or no? Okay, I can't hear you. Hold on a minute, and I'll turn on your mic, then I can hear you.
Mm-hmm.
And Andy runs Alan.
Full-time job right there.
And it's a full-time job right there. So anyway, 602-508-0960. Let's go to the phones real quick. Mike, good morning. How can we help you?
Hey, good morning, Salem. Appreciate it. Mike Graham here in Mesa.
Oh, hi.
I've got a 2000 S10, had it since it's new, and the HVAC fan squeals now when I turn it to 3 or 4. When I first have it in 1 or 2, it doesn't seem to run at all. But I go to 3, and here's the noise it makes. And then it kind of goes away after maybe 5, 10, 15 seconds. What do you think that is?
Can you get to the back side of the motor by opening up the hood? It'll be on the passenger side.
The back side of the
blower motor?
Yeah, I suppose I can. Yeah, okay. I'm not sure what it looks like. Yeah.
It just looks like a normal tomato can, and it's probably going to be 2 inches long, and it's going to slide into a housing underneath the hood on the passenger side in front of the windshield.
But
your blower motor, if it's there, and I think it is, then you put your hands on it, and you have your wife go through the different ranges of 1, 2, 3, 4. And she goes up and down, and you hold on to it. Then when it's making the noise, I want you to just take the wooden hammer handle and tap the blower motor. And if the noise goes away, you need to replace it.
it sounded to me maybe like the tips of the fan were hitting some of the plasticware in there, and were scraping. Is that the sound it's making?
If it is a flapping noise, then there could be anything from a soda straw to a jack-in-the-box taco wrapper. There can be all kinds of stuff that can end up in that blower. And it's the wheel.
Okay.
You're right. It's the wheel. But you said that it wouldn't make it on lower speeds, and it would as you sped the fan up. See, normally when we find somebody's sock in the blower motor, if we find a straw or something, it makes noise all the time.
Okay.
So I kind of went the other direction.
Yeah. Fair enough. I'm wondering if in 1 and 2 it's not running at all, because I don't hear it when I'm idling or at a standstill. But when I go at any 30, 40 miles an hour in the setting 2, it seems to allow the blow. So some of that's ram air blow, and I'm not sure if it's even running in 1 or 2. Maybe there's something obstructing it, maybe, huh?
Okay, no. Let me talk about this real quick. First of all, the blower motor on virtually every car, the 1, 2, and 3 go through a resistor. And number 4 is direct. It gets all the voltage. So we control the voltage and we control the speed. So 1 is controlled, 2 is a little bit allowed to go a little faster, 3, but 4 is wide open throttle. So when you have a blower resistor that's bad, usually you lose 1, 2, and 3. If you've got a high speed fan, then you lose high speed. So I don't think you have anything. I think we should start with the blower motor first. And forget the fan speeds. It could be that the blower motor's bad and it won't spin in 1 or 2. And it'll spin in 3, and then when you give it a crap load of power, it'll spin in 4. So, okay. And then, but I want you to hit the back of the motor with a hammer handle. And if, and then if you say, oh, all of a sudden it works fine. Then you got two choices. Now there's four bolts that hold the blower motor on. You can take the four bolts out and just slide the motor. And like I said, if you find a straw or a Taco Bell wrapper in there, you're done.
More than likely, both of those problems would be fixed if he replaced the blower motor.
If there was nothing inside of it.
Yes.
I agree with you.
Yeah.
I agree with you. And it's a 2000, you said, right?
Yes, sir. 2000. Had it since new, 88,000 miles.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, you know, the blower motor, I want to know if the brushes are bad or if you got a bad bearing. So if you hit it with the hammer handle and it goes away, then you got to decide whether you want to do it or not. However, if you tap it with a hammer and the noise goes away and then a day later it comes back, then a blower motor is the appropriate replacement.
Is that something I can undo those four bolts and with a little knowledge replace it myself?
Yeah, it's a quarter inch, usually a quarter inch screws. You don't strip them, so you don't use an air gun or anything on them. And you don't have to disconnect the battery. Keys in your pocket, four screws, gently pull it and slide it back and forth clockwise, counterclockwise. And Now, you could have a cage that's bad, too. The faster it goes, it makes more noise. So you can see it, though. You'll be able to see it. So the blower motor, take it down, make sure they give you exactly what you got, put it all back together, and you're done. Look in the hole, though, too, to make sure we don't have a dead squirrel in there or something, okay?
Okay, a couple more things. Who do you recommend to fix it if I don't in the... excuse me, I'm in West Mesa, Southern and Dobson. My guy quit working. Do you know a guy by the name of Spike that used to work in Tempe that retired recently? Spike, S-P-I-K-E?
No, not at all. I recommend Thompson's up at Stapley in Maine, just east on the south side of the road, Stapley in Maine.
Okay.
And just tell Brian and Thelma that Salem says that there's no way they're going to be able to fix your fan motor, but I'll spot them the fix when they call me. And I'm teasing, of course, but it's a nice way to introduce yourself to them.
Okay, Thompson, Stapley, Maine. One more question, if you got a minute.
Go ahead.
I put a bottle of 134A in it last summer. It seemed to be a little warmer than normal. It took the one bottle can, if you will, about. Maybe 12 ounces, it's usually not 16, and it seems to work better now. Do you recommend we do that for us shade tree guys and put a bottle in occasionally when we're when it's not as cool?
I would say no.
I would say absolutely not.
And let me just tell you the truth, though, okay?
Yeah.
We
never
knew how much Freon was in there or not. You could have taken that car to 20 shops, and every one of them would have put a different amount in there. Every one of them. But today, we're going to suck out all your Freon, we're going to weigh it and clean it, and we're going to look and it says that you hold 22 ounces, but you only have 18 in there. So we're going to take, you got 18, we're going to take it out, clean it, put it right back in, and then the difference between 14 and 18, we're going to add those 4 ounces, and you're done. We are putting, so for the first time ever, we have a dipstick for refrigeration Freon. Literally a dipstick. We've never had that before. So on your car, take it down. It's going to be, what is it going to be? 75 to 125?
$200 or less to recharge.
Yeah, I would say.
Depending on how much refrigerant.
Yeah, I would say probably 2 to 250 maybe.
On the suck and fill, clean, replus, and then add whatever he has.
Yeah, and they add dye as well. The problem is with you adding Freon is you could overcharge it, you could still be undercharged. And the other thing is a lot of those have the sealant in them. So as a shop, if you've added Freon with sealant, we cannot hook up our machines to it because the sealant can ruin our machines. So you've just put yourself in such a bad spot for anyone else to help you or to get the problem fixed by adding your own Freon.
And so
when you say I have a dipstick, you mean the fact you evacuate, clean, and then re-put it
in? Yeah. What's the word I'm looking for?
Hypothetically.
Hypothetical is not a word, but it's a hypothetical dipstick, if you will.
Yeah.
We don't literally have a dipstick, but we have a piece of equipment, like I said, and we're not going to charge you for your refrigerant. Okay? I don't know about other shops, but we're not going to charge you for your 11 ounces. But if it takes 16, we're going to charge you for the 5 plus the service. So we're cleaning your old stuff, giving it back to you. So in the old days, we'd just suck it all out. You wouldn't get any of it, or we'd let it fly into the atmosphere or whatever. And then we turn around and fill it up as best we can to 23 ounces, which was virtually impossible.
And I would just wait till summer, maybe get one of those thermometers and stick it in the center vent of your vehicle, drive it around, see kind of what you're getting. If you're at 45 to 50 degrees, I would say don't do anything to it. If you're in 60, 65, something like that, then, you know, have a shop look at it, but other than that, you're probably good.
Got to take a break. 602-508-0960, but one other comment. There's a difference between normal and max, and I'll explain that when we come back from the break. But there's a big difference in how it's going to act between normal and max. Oh, so you don't want me to break at 55. You see, he's talking to me. And oh, boy. So are we still on the air, Gil? Did you just embarrass me in front of God and everybody?
Well, yeah, you're 5 minutes early. Poor Gil's eating his sandwich over there. You're trying to get him a break. He's in there pounding a ham sandwich.
Gil, go ahead and talk.
I got to pick up my sandwich.
That's right.
Oh, we're all out of sorts today.
I don't know. All right, do you guys know?
Like, what's he do? He's got 5 minutes left. What are we doing here?
All right, you two. What's the difference between max and normal? You first, Andy.
What do you mean? What's for it, the temperature
your air conditioning
range?
Controls. No, your air conditioning controls. What's different between when you put it on normal or when you put it on maximum? Forget the blower motor speed.
I know maximum is a lot colder in my car.
You got anything?
Yeah, max recirculates the inside air, where normal does not.
Okay. Well, and in a simplistic way, normal is a swamp cooler. We're taking outside air and cooling it, put it in the car. Maximum is recirculation, just exactly what you said.
Yeah.
So we're going to, now here's the bad news. We suck the cold air out of the car. Do you know where we suck it from?
Suck the cold air out of the car.
Well, we take on a maximum, we're recirculating it.
Yeah.
So we have to have a suck and an exit.
Yeah.
So where do we suck? The answer is that the passenger side floorboard.
Oh, yeah.
Okay? So if you got somebody sitting next to you with stinky feet, you want to keep out of the recirculation because all you're going to do is suck the stink off of his feet and send it, or her feet.
You don't want to be normal when you're next to a big old diesel that's stinky or a smoking vehicle or...
Exactly right.
Something like that and get that in your car.
But hot air rises, cold air's low, so when you first put on get in your car, you go to normal, you crack the windows, and we're going to put cold air in there, but we got to kick the hot air out. So once we do that, then we go into maximum and we start recirculating the air, and now you're home free. But it's science that you kids didn't get, but hot air rises.
You also shut your AC off, you know, 2 miles before home, right?
Who does?
You.
I do not. But I'll tell you what, that's probably one of the biggest questions I get is, do you shut it off before you go home? Well, let me ask you this.
The real question is, Mark, do you?
No, I don't.
Why would you do that? What's, I don't get it.
You shut the AC off and just let the fan blow?
No, I don't know what you're talking about. I swear to God, I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, why would you do that? What's the point of that? It sounds like to me you're just going to be sweating your butt off the last 2 miles of your journey. I would never do that.
Actually, what you're talking about is an old-time guy thing.
Yeah, okay? You talk about it all the time.
Are you talking about shutting it off before you shut the vehicle off?
And yes.
So it's not on when you start it?
Yes.
Well, that's different than shutting it off 2 miles early.
Wait a minute. Let's think about this, okay? You're saying shut the air off before you turn the key off. So that it's not on when you turn the key back on.
No, I'm saying before you start, no, a little bit before you stop driving.
Okay. The air conditioning doesn't care. When you turn the key off, the compressor,
it's not going to love you more.
Yeah, it's not going to love you more.
I don't do that. That's my AC is max 100% of the time.
And it doesn't make any difference.
Day, I go out to a car and she's doing something. I don't know what it was. It was like 50 degrees outside. She's got, and I'm talking to her in the passenger window. She's got it on max. It's like 50 degrees outside. We can see her breath. And she's got it. I said, what are you doing? Poor Josie's back there. It looks like a grizzly bear all curled up. And I said, what are you doing? She goes, I'm hot. I'm like, dude, it's like 50 degrees and you just got into a cold car. What is going on with you?
Let's set the thing. Josie's your 5-year-old daughter.
Yeah.
All right.
Four.
And what's that?
Four.
Okay. Four. Whatever.
Let's not let her grow up too quickly.
Okay. And so she's in your car and you got the air conditioning blowing icicles.
Yeah.
And you got her all bundled up. That's child abuse, really.
Oh, yeah.
It is. Yeah. It's child. All right. Let's get back to where we're at. The old guys used to say, shut off your air before you get home, let everything stabilize. The car doesn't care. Not only that is when you turn, let me ask you a question. When the wipers are running and you go to start your car, what happens to the wipers?
They start.
Now, you've already got them on. You turn the key to the on position, just on, and the wipers are flapping. Okay? When you go to start, what do the wipers do?
They stop.
They stop. That's because in the start mode, we shut everything down. We shut off the blower motors. We shut off the wipers. We shut everything down so the starter can have all the juice of the battery. That's been there since 1930s.
Okay, now you have 10 seconds.
No, I've got as many as I want.
No.
602-508-0960. We got the lines open. 602-508-0960. We're waiting for all the old guys. Give us a call.
Now, once again, here's Mark.
Well, welcome back, everybody. Mark and Alan Salem, Andy and my wife and my granddaughter, Josie, have decided to go shopping.
Junkin'.
Oh, that's right. It is junkin'. It's just flat out junkin'. They go garage sales and all that kind of stuff. Nevertheless, 602-508-0960. The lines are wide open, 602-508-0960. And while you call in, we got five lines, so it's not like you're the only one, but you can call 602-508-0960. Harker's Automotive is at 38th Avenue and Indian School. It's a really great shop. Bob runs the shop, and his wife Ellen runs the front. But between Bob and Jeremy, it's probably one of the best duos in the entire valley. If there's 10 shops that have two guys that are just smarter than heck and they have a wide range of experience, then certainly Harker's is one of those guys. Jeremy and Bob can do amazing things. I'll tell you a real quick story. So a guy brings a BMW and says it's blowing water out of the vents. So when he turns on the air conditioning, it blows mist of water and water he can feel. So the estimate from some other shop was $1,000 or more. So he called me and I said, we just take it over to Harker and just let him look at it. So inside, underneath the glove box and behind the glove box on virtually every car is a cavern where the condenser or the evaporator for the air conditioning sweats. Well, the water is supposed to fall outside the car. There's a drain there. So they put it up in the air and it's full of water. So they stick a screwdriver up through the drain and all of a sudden they're completely covered with water. So they know the drain is plugged. And they also know that they got to kind of clean it out a little bit. So oftentimes we'll take something that blows a lot of air and we'll close off all the vents and we'll blow into the vent instead of coming out. And then that way we're blowing into this box and we're cleaning out. So they take the vent off, which makes the hole a little bit bigger, and they fix it. And I think the bill was less than $200. So it's that kind of shops that I put in front of you. And Harker's, that's an example of Harker's, exactly what they did for a customer that they had never met before. So it really doesn't have any difference on how most of us, well, how the shops, the best car repair shops in Phoenix. I don't know anybody who charges a newbie more than an oldbie. It's true that we're probably going to extend courtesies to someone that's been doing business with us for 20 years that we may not extend to the person who's there, you know, for the first time. But when I talk about courtesies, I'm talking about minimal stuff. So 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960, and we have a caller.
That would be Gail.
Gail, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. How are you?
I'm good. Thank you.
I've got a 1998 Chevy S10 with a 4.3 V6.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, it doesn't happen all the time, when I start the car up, it lurches forward. Sometimes, on an incline, other times I'm just flat on the ground. It lurches forward and feels almost like the engine is jumping up, and it'll actually move forward, and then it drops back into park again.
Okay, so let me get this straight. You're in park, your foot's on the brake, and you start it up.
Correct.
And the car kind of lurches forward an inch, 5 inches, 10 inches?
It's probably more like an inch, but it just feels like everything is jumping up off the engine mount.
Okay. That wouldn't have anything to do with it. All those engine mounts could be bad, and it wouldn't be what you're talking about. The symptoms of bad engine mounts are completely different than what we're describing right now. So let me ask you another question, because you did say something about a slope. Is there a difference between flat ground startup, nose of the vehicle down or the butt down? I'm showing three different situations here. Does it happen in all three of them?
It's only when the usually when the butt is up.
Okay. Okay.
I'm sorry. Butt is down. Head.
Okay.
Heads up.
I'm not quite sure I'd worry about that. I can't answer your question, but I'm not sure I worry about that. When we have a car that's not level and we go to start it, we have to somehow or another disengage the transmission either to drive or to park, and that's always going to be a rough transition because the load of the car, if the butt's down and we put it in drive, then we got to take up a little bit of slack before we start moving the vehicle. So if you had bad motor mounts, you'd have a clunk on a hard acceleration. If you had bad motor mounts, then you'd have a vibration through the seat of your pants or a vibration through the steering wheel that would go away when you put it in neutral.
Okay.
And so
not
if
bad.
You don't have the vibration in reverse, you're idling, your foot's on the brake,
nope.
And you put it in reverse, flat ground, put it in reverse, then you put it in drive, and there's no vibration, you don't have bad mounts.
Okay.
All righty?
All right, got it. Thank you, Mark.
You betcha. Good luck to you, Gail. Thank you. Okay, we got a what would you call that? A surge? A startup
no,
surge?
No, I would say, I don't know, maybe a heck, lunge?
Yeah, that one. Yeah, lunge is fine. Because we always write this down, because if somebody calls back, we can identify who they are. Okay, we got another caller, Gail?
That would be Glenn.
Glenn, good morning.
Good morning, Mark. I've got a 2013 Dodge crew cab pickup. It's a two-wheel drive, and I've got a pinging when I'm shifting into gear or changing directions, and I thought it was a U-joint, and I actually had it in the shop 8 months ago, and they replaced a ring and pinion in the rear end, and they checked it out, said the U-joints were all good, and they're not sure where the sound is coming from, and
Do you still have the same noise you had after a ring and pinion?
Yes, yeah. In fact, it was happening before I heard it when the ring gear popped, you know, but I was having that same sound before the ring gear popped.
So,
but I'm
why did they replace the ring gear to fix the symptoms you're talking about?
No. Evidently, the shims had gone out of the pinion, and the pinion had shifted, and it blew the teeth off the ring gear.
Okay.
And
okay.
So I had it in for that. But at the same time I had it in, I told him I'd been having that sound of that pinging sound, like sound like a U-joint flopping in there, you know.
Yeah.
And they checked it out and said, no, it was fine. And actually, they made, I guess, they said maybe the end of the drive shaft where it goes into the transmission, that those gears maybe were a little bad, were a little loose at 213,000 miles, and that maybe that sound was transmitting through the aluminum drive shaft. But it's
describe
no concern
this noise
that
I... describe this noise again. You said a pinging noise?
Yeah, it's a ping. It's a metallic ping.
So like somebody hits your drive shaft with a hammer.
Yes, exactly.
Okay. All right. So, and you get in and you start it up and you're in park, the noise isn't there.
Right.
You put it in reverse your drive, and then you have the noise.
And it's not consistent, but it's 40% of the time when you change direction shifting. And usually not starting out probably, but if you've been driving and I'm going from drive to reverse or reverse to drive, you know, make it a J turn or something, and that's when you hear it's changing directions in the transmission.
Okay,
I'd have to hear it.
Yeah,
let's
talk about all the options here. Was this a noise you had before the differential was rebuilt?
Yes.
Yes.
Okay, and it's the same noise after the differential was rebuilt.
Yes.
Okay. The reason I ask you that is because the slop in the ring and pinion could be causing that ding. And so I needed to make sure that this wasn't why they replaced the ring and pinion, but you had the noise before and you had it after. The only way that I let my guys check U-joints is pull the damn shaft. We can all look at the U-joints and we can shake the drive shaft and we can do all that magic crap that we were taught by the old guys, but that doesn't guarantee anything. So you got to take the shaft off. You got to put it on your workbench, and you got to take that U-joint and go north and south and east and west. You'll feel it if it's bad. Now, another thing you could do, if you wanted to, this is dangerous, so you obviously you have to be sure. Get your wife to lay underneath the truck, and you get inside, get your son or whatever, get your neighbor. You just got to make sure you don't run over him. But what you're going to do is you're going to start it up, and you're going to go from reverse, ding, and go to drive, ding. The person underneath, if I was underneath and Alan was in the driver's compartment, I'd be touching the drive shaft on the back. And that's not going to spin because you've got your foot on the brake. So all you're doing is reverse, neutral, drive, neutral, reverse. So I'm going to touch the drive shaft on both ends. I'm also going to look to see if there's any excessive, you know, turn on drive and then turn on reverse. But I really think that this isn't going to be that tough. Now, the only other thing could be is you got the idle too high. So if it, the idle is up high because the thermostat's gone, so the engine thinks the engine's cold, the cooling system's cold, so the engine brings up the RPM because you took the thermostat out because you didn't, you thought it was running too hot. All of a sudden, we're shifting from reverse to drive at 400 RPMs than we normally would, and that will cause that noise.
Huh, okay, well that makes a little sense too, yeah.
But yeah, how about this? Do you have a vibration at 40, 50, 60, 70, 80 miles an hour?
Not at all. It's smooth as can be.
Okay. Then it's not anything in the drive shaft of significance. I would think that you want to check the idle, and in drive you should be around between 600 and 700 RPM.
Okay. Well, maybe I'll get that checked then. So, okay. Yeah, and I'm not too worried about the rear end work because the shop, it was up in Idaho, but the shop that did it, they're a very competent shop, and they did have the drive line out because they were working on the rear end also. And
okay.
And so I kind of have faith in them, but I just, they didn't have a clue, and they drove it afterwards, and they said they actually heard it. And
but you drove all the way from there to here.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, this isn't anything that's substantial.
No, it's been going on for a year. So.
Okay. The reason I didn't want to disparage your shop, but I just, here's what I hear a lot. I took it in, and they said that the ring and pinion's bad, and I had this noise. They did $1,100, $1,200, $1,400 worth of ring and pinion. Then I still got the noise. How do you handle that? You know what I mean?
Right.
So I ask you in a nice way, and you clarify I had it before and after. So it's just, that's the embarrassing part. We had a customer come in the other day that had spent $800 to take care of a noise, and she still had the noise. And so I'm wondering, why don't you take it back to the guys who took your $800? And she says, "Oh, I just
take another $800."
Yeah, yeah. So you know, that's why you always ask for your old parts back. So you can go back.
Oh, and they did. They gave me back, and the ring was missing three teeth, and the pinion was in bad shape. So. Yeah.
All right, well, that's your wife's fault.
Anyway.
Because she was driving the thing, and she knocked those three teeth off. It's guaranteed.
Yeah, right.
So. All righty. Well, listen, thank you very much, Glenn. Thank you very much. The lines are wide open. There's five of them, 602-508-0960, 602-508-0960. We'll be back.
Raised up from under my
Welcome back, everybody. Let me just push some buttons here and figure out what the heck I have to do.
Pee.
Huh?
Pee.
I know. I tried pee, but now how about we do that?
There you go.
That was doing
there we go.
All right, 21 minutes after 11 o'clock. Mark Salem here with Alan Salem, and we're both at your service. Let me tell real quick, talk about a really great shop. Folks, in 1988, I started my list of the best car repair shops in Phoenix. It's the list of today. I know every single guy who's run these shops. I know them personally. They have my cell phone. I have theirs. Action Auto at I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner, is no different. I've known Tom since 1983. So if you need quality workmanship, excellent customer service, a fast turnaround time, and someone who will listen and then diagnose your problem and give you an estimate, then Action Auto Repair. He does oil changes and everything else, but he's really good at, this is what it's doing, can you tell me what it is and then how much to fix it? So Action Auto, I-17 in Deer Valley, northwest corner. Let's go to the phones. Lauren, you're up first.
Good morning. A couple of quick questions. That spring you were talking about with air conditioning, I heard quite a few years ago, I'm one of these old guys as well, I heard that when you got your air conditioning on, before you get home, turn the compressor off by hitting the AC switch so that the system will dry. Is that possibly what you were referring to?
That's certainly one of the old wives' tales. Here's the deal. You're right. On the low side, we're running 30, 40 pounds, and on the high side, it depends on the air moving across the grill as well as, you know, what the ambient temperature is. But see, it doesn't really make any difference if you shut the compressor off manually or if you turn the key off. It's the same. It's absolutely the same. So if you push the button, compressor comes to a stop. You turn the key off, the compressor comes to a stop. It's the same thing. So,
but doesn't it dry the system if you run it just with fan and no air compressor going?
Well, if you push the button to turn off the air conditioning compressor, isn't that what you're talking about? You turn the compressor off, and who cares about the blower?
No, the blower's still blowing, but it's not blowing cold air, and the theory behind it is that it's drying out the system. The reason I ask is I got a brand new 2019 Ford Edge, and just recently, and I'm going to be taking it in under warranty, when I turn the compressor off, if I don't need the compressor on, and just have the fan going, I'm getting a real, not a musty smell, but a putrid smell coming out of the air conditioning system.
Okay. What you're talking about is on a humid time frame in Phoenix weather, we're going to have the condenser, which is behind the glove box, sweat.
Yes, and, okay.
And you're right, but you might be the first person, Alan. When was the last time you heard about a musty smell out of an air conditioning vent?
Well, not typically. I mean, if we get a flood car,
yeah.
Or if we get
this is like a sour smell. It's a putrid sour. It's not musty. It's sour.
Okay.
And like
are you
a
running,
brand new car, I ordered the car.
Okay. Are you running it in max or are you running it normal?
Normal.
Okay. Normal is taking outside air. Or actually inside air, you're getting air from the outside. So if you're smelling something, it's coming from the outside. But maximum, we recirculate, like air conditioning at your house. But normal's a swamp cooler. Outside air come in and we cool it. Now, if you've got a putrid smell and you think that you're growing mold on the condenser behind the glove box, then all you do is don't go to maximum anymore. Run normal in your air conditioning. Don't go to maximum. That'll dry out the evaporator case and put you back where you want to be.
How many miles you got on this thing?
Okay. Oh, it's 6,000 miles. Car is new. It just started this. I mean,
have you Have you just out of curiosity inspected the cabin air filter?
No, not yet because it's new.
I get you. I just didn't know if that was something.
And it's only occasional. It doesn't always do it, and it only does it when I turn the air conditioning, push the switch off, the light goes off, and it's just outside air. Because I don't need the air on, I just want a little bit of circulation air.
Sure.
You'll get this putrid, sour smell coming through the cabin, real, real distinctive. Like,
okay,
it hits you like a brick wall.
Huh. All right. The only thing I can tell you is I don't think I'd take that in right now. I'd wait till I got 10,000 miles on it or so. You can call up the service writer and tell him, hey, make a notation that I've got this putrid smell, but I'm going to see.
Okay.
Because we don't have any idea if we're getting the smell off in a condenser or the evaporator that's brand new or the box it sits in or whatever. We've got a lot of possibilities. And as long as it blows cold. But for the time being, if you think you're too wet in the evaporator case, then just run outside air, and that'll dry it up, and you'll be fine. So,
yeah,
all righty.
Okay.
Do you have something else?
One last question. Is it worth rotating tires, or is this just another way of shop making money? Is the benefit of rotating tires?
Oh, that's easy. If you don't rotate your tires, your front ones will wear out at halfway of the back. Now, the front tires also wear on the outer edge because you turn right and you turn left and we lean the tire out. So you're going to wear the outside edges of both front tires. We need to give those a break. So we put them on the back. We put the backs on the front. The backs are square. Their tread is square. So now we're going to start wearing that outside edge. The people that, let's pretend that the tires are going to last 40,000 miles. People that don't rotate them need fronts at 20. Virtually always.
Perfect.
And I'm using round numbers here. But, no, you have to rotate the tires. Besides that, here's the deal. The guys should check the brakes. They should check the DOT to make sure the tire's not 10 years old. They should look for nails and stuff like that. And then they're going to check the inflation. That's what a tire rotation is. Those are all good things. Those are all good things.
Okay.
All righty?
Perfect. That's all I need. No, thanks very much.
Thank you very much. Ed, how can we help you?
Well, I have an oil pressure issue. I have a 2004 Chevrolet truck with a 6.0 motor, And when I start it first thing in the morning, I have about 20 pounds of oil pressure. Then as the truck warms up, gets to operating temperature, it goes up to over 40.
Okay.
So it's always kind of contrary to what I thought, you know, that it's high oil pressure when it's cold, and then it thins out and you drop your, but mine's kind of doing the opposite.
How many miles are on it?
230,000.
And what oil are you running? What weight?
I think it's 530 or 1030. It's whatever okay. The truck's supposed to have.
Okay, I don't think I'd worry about that. I agree that normally we have more oil pressure when it's cold, and then we lose a little. But your 20 to 40 pounds is within the okay range. There's no question about it. It's okay. Now, if the oil's real thick, then we can bypass the filter, and that could change the oil pressure. But you got oil pressure. Forget. And another thing else is we also have an oil pressure switch that may give you a different reading, hot and cold, and we can also have a gauge issue that might be out of whack or out of spec. But if it's 20 in the morning and you're not rattling, and then it goes to 40, you know, you and I can go to Washington, D.C., and I won't take my AAA card. So
I think those okay. are notorious. I think those are notorious. I'm trying to figure out how that would do it for the oil ring, the oil pump pickup tube O-ring going bad on those. I'm trying to figure out how that would affect the oil pressure without going, you know, starting and then going lower when it's not picking up oil pressure.
The O-ring's above the level of the oil, so it's going to suck air.
Yeah.
And then if you drive it and you shake the vehicle, you'll see the go up and down,
because
the O-ring's above the level of the oil.
Right.
Now, to diagnose that, do you know how to diagnose it?
Not offhand.
Okay, you just overfill the crankcase and go drive it. Get
the
O-ring. Get the O-ring underneath oil. Then all of a sudden, boom, everything's okay. Then you drain the oil and you got to pull the pan and do the O-ring.
Gotcha.
You're right about that. So really and truly, I wouldn't be dealing with that. I wouldn't lose any sleep with that at all. I think you're just fine.
Okay.
All right.
Okay,
thank you very much.
Appreciate the help.
Uh-huh. And I have another caller, which is Lee, but Lee, I can't get you because I'm 20 seconds away from my 30 break. So if you just stay right there, you're first, I promise. Anybody else? 602-508-0960. 602-508-0960. Alan Salem, my son, Mark Salem. We've both been in the business for a very, very long time. I'm an ASC master, and he is ASC certified. So 602-508-0960. This is 960 The Patriot, KKNT. Well, welcome back, everybody. 34 minutes after the hour of... I got to push right the buttons. Okay, let's start again. 34 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock, and I'll turn off my speaker so there's no back feed on that. And we promised Lee we'd get to him. Lee, go ahead. How can we help you?
Hey, how you guys doing? Hey, I talked to you the other day about people with motorhome tires and air. Anyways, the guy with the drive shaft ring.
Uh-huh.
I had a friend of mine back in the day with Peterbilt, and he had a ring in his drive shaft, and we could never figure out what it was. It turned out the drive shaft had a minute crack in it, and every time, you know, you change direction, you know, forward to reverse or whatever, it would go ding, and it sounded like a bell. And it was it turned out they took his drive shaft out and inspected the heck out of it and found a crack in it. So, but anyway.
You're right. You're I can see exactly. Now, here's, I'm thinking out loud. I'm not saying I'm right. If you went and put the drive shaft on the bench and you took a ball peen hammer and you just started at one end and you did the 12 o'clock and then you rotated a quarter turn and you hit it again, I wonder if there would be a difference in the sound as you lightly tapped that drive shaft as you got close to the crack. That's kind of how
it might be.
Yeah.
You know, it'd be like a high pressure gas cylinder. We always ring test them.
Okay.
I hit them with something, and they go ding. And if it's got a crack in it, it goes duh. You know,
yeah.
It's dull sound.
You can
so
tell
these. Might, but I remember his drive shaft. You could actually, when you really looked at it and cleaned it up, you could actually see the little crack in it.
Yeah, yeah. How old are you?
Did he say me?
Yeah.
I'm way older than you are. I'm 73.
Well, and the reason I ask you is because I wanted to pay you a compliment. You clearly have been around the block a couple of times. Use the words that we understand and that we use ourselves. So you have become part of Mark's posse of gray-haired guys that know a little bit more about cars than the younger guys that have just graduated high school. So
cars and big trucks and expensive ass motorhomes.
All right, I'm going to tell you my big truck story. You ready?
Yeah, go ahead.
I've got a Volvo with a 13-liter, 11-liter,
something.
And so I said to my son, you know, this thing's really, really quiet, so I need you to kind of give me a little bit more noise. So he says, okay, Dad.
Dynaflex.
So, okay. I'm taking a big trailer with a tractor on it, and I'm going to go to Payson. And we aren't even out of town, and my wife is madder than hell. And she says, this thing is way too loud. And I say, okay, honey, when I get back, I'll talk to Alan. So we get up to Slate Creek Hill at the top of Mount Ord, and on the way down, I hit the Jake brake, and I mean to tell you, she went crazy. And so I had to downshift and just kind of go down easy because I couldn't use the Jake brake. So I come back and I say to Alan, listen, whatever you did is not going to work. We need to go to plan B. So he says, okay. So then he gives me something, goes, Dad, this is in the middle between where we started and where we ended up. And I said, okay, it is perfect. It's absolutely perfect. So I say to him, tell me what you did. And he goes, well, on your old muffler, we just hogged it out. And it was straight through.
No. That's wrong.
Yeah, and so I said to him, you know, I wish you would have talked to me before we did that. But that's the first time I really understood what kind of noise that thing can make with a Jake brake on.
Well, the thing is, it depends on the size of this. You know, guys that back in my day were Hot Rod and Peterbilt and Kenworth, and it depends on the diameter of the pipe.
If you 5 inches? Still got,
yeah, you probably had 5-inch pipes on yours, and the amount it's weird. The amount of flow going through them for that little pipe, it makes a heck of a racket. And yeah, I can understand. I had a buddy of mine at a V12 Detroit with small stacks like that, and you couldn't stand next to the thing. You know, but you take, you know, like you take a C-15 Caterpillar and put 7-inch stacks on it, straight through, mm-hmm. You know, twin stacks. And it has a beautiful tone to it. You don't get any of that rattle and clackle sound, you know.
Yeah.
And,
but, you're right.
You know, black smoke. And
Yeah. I took the sleeper out of the back.
Everything we're around is
illegal. Yeah. Don't say illegal on this show, okay? Just stop that. I took the sleeper out of the back, and then I had a motorhome place put a wraparound thing with seat belts for my grandsons and stuff. Now, they loved it. But my wife, who was sitting up, you know, on the shotgun seat, she made it really clear that she's not driving in that truck anymore. But nevertheless, thank you for calling. Thank you very much. So when that was Lee, right? Right, Gil? Okay. All right. We got Kenneth. Kenneth, you stay there. We'll get you right on the other side of this. Well, welcome back, everybody. 43 minutes after the hour of 11 o'clock. Real quick, let me tell you. We have a best car repair shops list that has been on since 1988. You can apply, but you have to hit all the markers. So the filter eliminates probably half or even more of the people that apply. But it's not that they can't later do that. It's just that they're missing years of service and stuff like that, ASE-certified technicians. Thompson's Auto Repair and Towing. That family, Thompson's and Vivian's, have been in the business in Mesa since mid-60s. So Brian and Thelma, from those two different families, they've been around cars, they've been around gas stations, they've been around car repair for a very, very long time. So Thompson's Auto Repair is the only shop in Mesa that Mark Salem says is a good shop and promises you it's a good shop. They're on Main Street just east of Stapley, and once you meet Brian and Thelma, you'll understand why I like them as much as I do. Let's go to the phone. Kenneth, thank you for holding. How can I help you?
Okay, thank you. I have a 2008 2006 Grand Marquis that I just purchased from a private owner. And I noticed when I fill the gas tank, when it comes empty, I fill it, and then the gauge still shows empty on the thing, and then and eventually it works up to full again, but no problem. And the last time I filled it, which was last week, it was on empty, and I filled it up, and it still shows empty, and then pretty soon the light comes on that says it's empty, and this kind of stayed there the last week or so. So,
okay, it sounds like to me there's a float in the tank with a long arm, and the arm goes to a rheostat, and so as the arm goes up and down, the other end of the arm hits these piano keys, so to speak, and that's what gives you your level. I'm thinking that it's not a bad connection because it's definitely tied to where the fuel level is actually at. If it was an intermittent problem, maybe it happened from low to middle to high and everything in between. So the only fix on this, I'm going to guess, is drop the tank and replace what we call the sending unit.
Oh.
Now, inside that tank, how many miles are on the car?
83,000.
Okay. If you've never done the electric fuel pump, then you get two jobs for the price of one. So if, and I'm pretty sure your 06 is fuel injected and the fuel pump's in the tank. So when you go in, you do the sending unit and the fuel tank, and you've hit a home run because you don't do them separately. So if you've got, let's say, $300 to go in there, well, you only get $300 one time, and you do both things. My suggestion to you was because of the age of the car, 06, not necessarily because of the mileage, if you're going to go into the tank, do both the pump and the sending unit. Now, I got one other thing for you. Go to a Chevron station and buy a bottle of Tecron, okay? And put it into your fuel tank, and when you drive it, kind of shake the car around and stop abruptly and take off abruptly, and I want you to mix that. Sometimes there'll be a green moss kind of stuff, like if you don't brush your teeth for a week, and that Tecron will clean up those piano keys, and all of a sudden it'll work. Okay. Try it. You have nothing to lose but $6.
It's called what, Tecron?
Tecron.
Okay.
T-E-C-H.
More questions?
Yes, you can.
Okay. I was on my way to California recently, and I had called to get an oil change from you folks, and your lovely daughter said they were booked up, and I was leaving the next morning, so they couldn't handle it. And I guess it was your lovely daughter. How many lovely daughters do you have?
I've got one that answers the phone. Actually, I have two daughters, but I
asked the one, and they couldn't handle it, so I went over here locally because a sticker says it was due for a change, and I use a blended, it showed blended on there. Now, this guy told me that he has two prices, but the coupon is $19, and I know the other one without a coupon is $24. I checked with you folks, and yours was going to run approximately 50s. But anyway, I said, well, what's the difference? He said, well, we don't sell regular oil. Every oil change we have is a blended. Does that make any sense to you that they blend it without telling you?
This whole oil thing is in flux. Let me explain. You have conventional oil. That's about a $20 to $25 oil change. Maybe let's go do this. $20 to $30, so I include everybody. Okay.
Yeah.
Then you got a blended oil. And the blended is conventional blended with synthetic. But
that's what my use is.
You don't know if it's a 1090 or you don't know if it's a 50-50.
Uh-huh.
So no one can answer that. Now, you got the synthetic that's $70-some-odd.
Mm-hmm.
But here's the deal. Kenneth, the mileage intervals to change the oil is completely different. For instance, conventional is 3 to 5,000 miles. Semi-synthetic is 5 to 7,500 miles, and synthetic is 7,500 miles to 10. So, how many miles a year do you drive?
Oh, probably 8 or 7 or 8. I'm 90 years old, so
okay.
I don't drive too much, but I suppose around 8 to 10 maybe.
Now, think about this. You're 8 to 10,000 miles. Why don't you change your oil once a year in April, before the summertime? And you can go all year long without another oil change, and I would do the same for my father.
Yeah.
So you're at synthetic, or at the semi-synthetic or the blended oil, how often are you going in there? 2-3 times a year?
Well, I just got the car with synthetic. My other car was always just every 3,000. But okay. What blows my mind, the sticker says, and he tells me he put synthetic because he doesn't sell regular oil. Every oil changes with a blended or regular oil.
Uh-huh.
He put a sticker on there, 3,000 miles. And I says to him, I said, well, if it's blended, why don't you have 6,000 miles on there? He says, oh, it's just a good idea to keep changing your mile. You change every 3,000 no matter what you got.
Don't good idea for them.
Don't you say the name of that shop. Okay, don't say the name of that shop.
I told him that was the last time I show up there. No, I say as I called you folks because I just got the car and I was going to bring it in, but I was the next day I was leaving for California.
I understand. What were you going to say, Alan?
No, I was just going to say the guy said it was a good idea to change it. Yeah, it's a good idea for them.
Exactly. That's exactly what I would say. Thank you. Because that's wrong. That's wrong. We would like to see you every 3,000 miles for a $75 oil change. That would be great for us. We get to clip you both ways. But the idea is you should tailor the quality of oil to the customer's driving. I can't tell you how many elderly lady and men in Ahwatukee and Mountain Park Ranch that do business with me. And we've got virtually all of them on synthetic oil. Once a year, that's it. See you later. That's it. So,
well, your daughter said the same. They were just booked up by the time I decided I better have the oil changed before I took this new car on a California trip. But
I understand. Well, just like if I can give you some advice, Andy is the go-to person. She usually answers the phone anyway. Just give us a couple of days' notice, and you might say, I'd like to get in the morning, and I want to wait for it. Because we like those kinds of people because we just get them in and out real quick. Yeah, now, if we find something wrong, you're there. We'll walk you out and say, hey, this is something you'll need to address in the next, 5,000 miles. So having the customer there during an oil change is kind of a benefit. But I got to run on, Ken. Thank you, Kenneth. Thank you very much. Bobby, you're up.
Hey, Mark. I got a couple questions. I got a 19 Subaru Outback. And when I start it up, when it's, cold in the morning, I get a pretty loud rattle from the engine for about 5 seconds. Is that normal?
I'd have to hear it, but I think it's under warranty. So I think to get it in writing, which I think is your best, you take it to the dealer and you say to them, I want you to let it sit overnight, and then I want you to start it the next morning and tell me what I'm hearing. Because now they have to write that down on a repair order, then they have to answer on the repair order. Now you're safe, because if 10,000 miles from now they say that it needs a new motor and it's your fault, then you say, wait a minute, I had these symptoms a long time ago and they said it was fine. So and that's self-defense for car expense. So the answer is we need to hear it, but the guys that are going to hear it are going to not charge you for it. So the warranty kicks in at that point. So I'm not going to tell you to go to another shop because you'll have to pay for it. So just take it back to them and tell them to start it cold in the morning. Now, you had a second question.
Oh, yeah, I got a 13 Mustang with only 50,000 on a GT.
Mm-hmm.
And talking about the air conditioning earlier, it doesn't seem to blow as cold as it used to. Is that normal with that many miles?
Yeah. We tell people a lot that 3 or 4 years you come in and let us use our electronic. Now, we're not the only ones in town that have the electronic dipstick. There's lots of shops. But bring it in. It's cheaper that way. Here's the thing. I'm going to take out 20 ounces of refrigerant, just clean it up and give it back to you. I'm not going to charge you for that. So in the old days.
Hey, where are you guys located?
Well, where are you at? And I'll send you to a shop close by.
I'm in I'm in Scottsdale, up in Via Linda and Shea.
Okay, go to Blackwell. Blackwell Automotive, 40th and Greenway. 40th and Greenway.
But what about you guys? I'd like to get on where you guys are.
You can come. We're at Warner and I-10. The name of the shop is Salem Boys.
Warner and I-10. Okay.
Yep. All righty. Hey, thank you.
Thanks a lot.
Okay, Bobby, thank you very much. Talking about car shops, I'll give you two of them, and they're on kind of the other side of the world from one another, and they do different things. Auto Dynamics is a shop that's in Sun City. They're really, really good at what they do. I've known Chuck since the late 70s. He opened this up in 1982. Chuck is now retired, and Derek is running the shop. So if you're anywhere in Sun City, the only shop that I recommend is Automotive Dynamics. It's a homegrown kind of auto repair shop. It's on its second generation, and as it normally is, the second generation's a little better than the first. And that's in my case as well. The young kids do things that I'd never thought about doing. So Auto Dynamics is on the north side of Grand Avenue, just west of 99th Avenue. Now, on the other side, up north, Strictly Diesel Service and Repair is a Better Business Bureau A-rated shop. They work on diesels. They work on their diehard diesel guys for service, repair, and parts. They work on both foreign and domestic, but not the big trucks. These are what they call light-duty diesel trucks. They're at I-17 and Pinnacle Peak Road, but what they're really, really good at is working on diesels. However, if you live up in that area and you have a Honda or a Toyota or a Chevy, Ford or Chrysler car, they'll also do some of the basic maintenance on that. So they'll do oil changes and tire rotations and stuff. They're well qualified for all of that. But it's a great diesel place. They know what they're doing. And this isn't their first rodeo, so to speak. Gil, we got anybody in the wings?
We have Lenny.
Lenny, good morning. How can we help you?
Yeah, thanks, Mark. Mark, I got a fuel gauge too. I noticed for several days I was standing on half full, and I thought I might have one for a while. So I checked my mind and said, yeah, that should have been moved. So I filled it up, and it all went to full. And now since I went to full, I've drawn about 67.
Yeah. Hey, Lenny, I need you to call back because your connection is just terrible. Either that or your wife's playing the drums in the background. So just call me back, 602-508-0960. But I think what he was talking about is he had a gas gauge problem where it was intermittently low or high and it was unexpected. It's really easy to, what you need to do, Lenny, if that's the case, is first of all, let it get as low as you can as with respect to fuel. And kind of notice where the gauge is at, then fill it up and see where the gauge is at. A lot of people say it only goes to 3/4, or it only goes to half, even though it's full. That really helps the repair shop, and that's going to cut down the diagnostic costs associated with that, if you can at least do that. Another thing you can do, if you have a 20-gallon tank, fill it up and run it down to about 15 gallons based on your mile per gallon, and then it should be in the appropriate spot. So a 20-gallon fill-up at 10, it ought to be half. Help us with that, and that will help us out altogether. My son, Alan Salem, is sitting here next to me. If you have a question about a diesel truck, a performance item, a lift, lower, tires, wheels, he does the happy work, we call.
That's right.
And so electric steps, you do those as well? Tell me what else you do.
Anything. Lots of diesels. Okay. Lifts, wheels, tires. I mean,
And I see sand buggies back there. I see Jeeps back there.
Yeah.
I see quads back there. I see all those kinds of stuff. So we can help you out. We can guide you. All you do is call Alan at Salem Boys, and he'll help you out the best you can. My name is Mark Salem. I've been around since 1979 working on cars. I'm an ASE Master Tech. And I'm here every Saturday between 10 and noon, and we're talking about cars. My email address is mark@salemboysauto.com. mark@salemboysauto.com. And I answer all the questions, and if you leave me a phone number, I'll do my best to call you back. That's quicker sometime. So I'm Mark Salem. He's Alan Salem. Thank you for spending your Saturday with me. mark@salemboysauto.com.